Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Transformation Cafe, a weekly half hour of light, topical conversation about spirituality, healing, energy, alternative medicine, higher levels of consciousness, and other insights. We're glad you're here. Transformation Cafe, a fun way to nourish your spirit. Now, let's get started and introduce our diners for tonight's show.
Well, hi, I want to welcome everybody to the Transformation Cafe. I'm your host, Robin Misevich, and as always, we've got all these lovely ladies scooting up to the table. We are in chapter two of our present book with our cafe book club, which is Presence by Amy Cuddy, and we have a co-host here, Miss Amy. She is a life coach and also a change agent for people. So if anybody out there is looking for somebody who can really help them to tapping into their creativity, or gosh, if you just need to fine-tune your elevator speech, she's a person who can really walk you through that. So, hi, Amy. How you doing?
Present and accounted for.
She's present and accounted for. Okay, I love that, since we're talking about present. And we have Miss Michelle joining us tonight. Miss Michelle, how are you tonight?
I'm great. Have I got a story for you?
Ooh, baby.
Ooh, loving that. Okay, so just to kind of back up a little bit and do a recap from last week, our show was 286, and we were doing our first chapter on presence. And one thing I really like about the author Amy Cuddy is she went right off the bat and was asking all these people about how they would define presence. And it just really surprised me, and it made me really think about to me, it's almost like the same thing as, you know, it's really out there nowadays where people say, you know, it's your, really look at yourself when it comes to defining your own, what you would define as success. And I think that's really what's happening with presence is the same thing, you know, what is presence for me and being in the moment, being in a way that I'm very aware of myself and what's going on with my stuff. So I'm really excited to get into this second chapter, which is believing and owning your own story. So I just really want to go to Michelle. So Michelle, what is this great thing you want to share with us? I was referring
to the chapter we're going to be discussing.
Oh, okay, very good. But you
have
built definitely over that. She's got stories. Okay, so I just want to back up too, and Amy did a great job defining. We went through this first chapter. There's all kinds of definitions for presence, but Amy goes on to say, presence, as I mean it through these pages, is the state of being attuned to and able to comfortably express our true thoughts, feelings, and values and potentials. That's it. It is not permanent or transcendent mode of being. It comes and goes. It is a moment-to-moment phenomenon. And then she goes on to say, presence, one second. Presence isn't about pretending to be competent. It's about believing and revealing the ability that you truly are. It's about shedding whatever is blocking you from expressing who you are, tricking yourself into accepting that you indeed are capable. Sometimes we have to get out of our own way so we can be able to be ourselves. And I thought that was really great because it really goes into what we're talking about tonight about being able to own your own story. And one thing I really love about this chapter, and it really intrigued me, was she had talked about when you can come from a place of really knowing your own story, who you are, and how you express that story, when people come up to you and try to, you know, knock you off your sense of strength and your sense of identity, you're just not going to be moved because you know who you are and you know exactly what it is, and you don't have to have anybody approve of that for you because it's what's true for you. So, Amy, what did you think about all that and what was coming up for you in owning your own story?
Well, what I love about what you just said about presence is about us here all, what does that look like for me? And at the beginning of chapter two, on page 42, this very short and sweet quote, presence is the inner self showing up. I think it's really that simple. On Friday, Dr. Lynn Joseph and I were at a veteran career fair. This is the seventh one we've been at, doing a workshop where we do the elevator pitch and using guided imagery. And the timing got all thrown off and all kinds of crazy things happened. So people thought things were, you know, that we were supposed to be presenting at a certain time. And so we ended up doing that. But there was two people who showed up in this big room two people, and they were both in the currently in the Air Force, and both would be out in 6 months, and they had not planned on being out. So mm-hmm. they, and here they're at this career fair, and my dear husband's trying to get them a job because there's all these people who have jobs, but they're really in this kind of this state of, you know, of grief and panic struck and not knowing what was going on. So Lynn and I sat down face to face. We didn't stand in front of the room. We sat right in front of them, and we just were present and listened to them and really just, where are you at and how can we support you in this moment? Instead of us, we had handouts and we had this big room and we could all this, but instead we chose to be present with them, and it was a truly magical, magical moment. That's presence.
What a gift for everybody to have that kind of experience and being able to have the sharing that you guys did. Wow. It was a magical, magical kind of experience with that. So, Michelle, where are you at with owning your and believing your own story with reading the chapter? What were you thinking about that?
Well, for the title, Owning Your Own Story, a lot of us get stuck in a story. So the way she uses it is different than what I thought she was going to mean, once again. Just like mm-hmm. the way she was using presence was different than the way I thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And when she talks about owning your story, it's really defining, you know, your core values, the wonderful aspects about your core, rather than the story of this happened to me at this time and I felt this way about it. It's a different kind of story.
Yeah, and what chapter two is really about is really looking at being authentic. And I love how she starts the chapter. She says, the wish to feel and to be seen as authentic seems like a basic human need, and maybe that's why the term authentic self is so popular these days. Actually, sometimes I feel like it's thrown around like confetti on New Year's Eve. I love that. I'm authentic. Just throwing it here and there, depending on people. And other people are like, really? No, I don't think so. So I just thought it was really. Go ahead, Amy.
Well, and I believe a basic need of as a human is to be seen and to be heard. And how do you know people really value you and love you if you're not showing who you really are? If you're not, you're
right.
allowing yourself to be seen and be heard. They're loving an image. They're appreciating an image, not really you. So how can you really feel loved, valued, and appreciated if they're not doing it for the real you?
Yeah. Good. So she still goes on page 43, she says, the authentic self is an experience, a state, not a trait. This transitory phenomenon has been described by psychologists as a subjective sense of being one's true self, one's momentary sense of self in alignment with one's real self. And if you go on to the next page, it really talks about the difference between a best self and a true self. And it was just, I'd never even thought about that, about best self and true self. And to me, it was almost the same thing in being able to define all that. So did that surprise you, Michelle, about being true as opposed to best?
Well, I think our truth is the best.
Mm.
You know, all of it. I actually had a conversation with you earlier today and just asked that when the parts of myself came out that maybe weren't, I wouldn't consider the best, could you just be there as a witness with me in it? Because my experience has been that when the parts of me that come out that aren't the best, people tend to want to affirm the best, and I just want all of it to be accepted.
Mm.
And that the true and the best self can exist together then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think ultimately that, and that's something that she does share about that, but I love how she, just for a moment, she split that to have you take a moment to really ponder about that and to at least have a thought about that, about, you know, well, is true and, you know, best the same? Is there a difference on that? And I agree with how you shared about that. She says, the physical and psychological adversity shapes us. Our challenge gives us insights and experiences that only we can have. And I don't want to be glib about this. They are things that we need not only to accept and also to embrace, even to see our strengths. While we are not, while we may have not chosen to include them in our concepts of ourselves, they are there. And what is, and what more can we do but to own them? And she shares a little bit about when she had had her accident. I don't know if we talked about that last show. She, at 17, had been thrown out of a car, and it literally changed the way she thought about everything. And she wound up losing friends over it because they just didn't know her anymore because she had changed so much. And I think a part of that's because, you know, why she got into the research and stuff she does in a psychological level and all that, to help her to understand what was really happening to her. So I think it was really, you know, everything happens for a reason. And really, you know, owning on that. She said, who or what exactly is our authentic best, and how do we find it or need it? And she goes into talking about looking at what makes people happy. And we've had shows about that, about, you know, happiness and how powerful that can be for people and being able to be forming your full potential of who you are. So on page 46, there's a list of four different things that you can do that help you to identify the best parts of yourself. So what did you think of those, Amy? Did you think that was a great exercise?
I'd like to back up a little bit. Let's go to 45.
Sure.
And it talks about Laura Morgan Roberts, who is an organizational behavioral professor, and she talks about ways that people could develop positive, authentic identities on the job. And she talks about how over time we collect these experiences into a portrait of who we are when we are our personal best. And she talks about guiding people through the process of creating a portal by helping them to identify enablers and blockers, things that, that help you to be your best self and things that pull you away from that, which I think is a really good model. So it's about, like, in what areas, and I love, you know, what Michelle is saying too, it's important that we are love for all we are. And when you talk about projection, what you're doing is you're projecting those parts of yourself that you don't particularly love or you're not owning, because they're not necessarily bad traits. They're just things that you haven't owned. And about how do I make sense of that with who I am? And I think one of the best things, you know, I'm very passionate about spirituality at work and living as a whole person at work. And, you know, I always throw this out. This is kind of an odd thing, but I'm going to throw it out anyway. There's a real prejudice in the workplace against people who are not morning people. And so the people are not thought well of if they're not their brightest and their shiniest first thing in the morning. So it's like, okay, so that, let's say, okay, so that's a negative thing that you're not a morning person. But in reality, you're somebody whose time clock is a little bit different. And so what you want to do is really utilize them more later in the day, or have the opportunity for them maybe to work at home. Instead of saying, oh, that's a bad trait, that's a bad thing, it's like, how do we utilize that for the betterment of the organization or the team?
What came up for me, I did do this exercise on page 46, the four questions, and when it asked for a signature strength, one of them was being unconventional. And not being a morning person means you're unconventional. And to me, I actually saw it as a strength. So that's how I term that. When I don't fit a lot of the norms, but it actually gives you a window into seeing things in a different way than most people do. So you yourself can be a creative portal because of that, to initiate change, to show people there's a different way to do things. So I see what you're saying, and we could list it as a blocker, but for me, it was more of an enabler.
Yeah, exactly. Well, again, and there's no pat answer to this.
That's cute.
I love that example, because something that I, under my filters, would consider a negative, somebody else would consider a positive. So there really isn't a negative or a positive here. It's how is it working in this situation, and how do we support each other? And, you know, next to you, I'm with you, the best self isn't necessarily what we want all the time. It's like, if I can, how do I be who I really am, utilizing my gifts and talents in this moment for the betterment of, you know, the whole team, if you're looking in terms of the workplace.
Yeah, because you bring up that the incident of, like, somebody who's not a morning person. To me, that could be a something that could be really a key thing for the people that are morning, then you're moving into the afternoon, some of those different tasks or things that need to be happening can get shifted to that other person because now they're on their
Absolutely.
They're on their game. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, you know, yeah, so you have certain troubleshooting or things that you're good at, you do in the morning, and then you'd hand it off to that person in the afternoon when they're their best. You just know that's the way that, you know, the way it flows.
So I love these questions, you know, and one of them about what is the three words that best describe you as an individual, and to what we've been talking about, also putting down what are those things that you may be working on, not just that, oh, these are my brightest, shiniest traits, but what are the things that I am working on? Because people want to be able to see you as real and vulnerable, and they want to see help you in growing. If you always look like you're perfect, you always look like you never need any support, people don't tend to be able to relate to you as much, I don't think.
Well, and I think that's the reason why there's just so many people that just feel like they're the lone ranger out there, and they're not really, they're having a hard time asking for help. You know, it goes right into that whole thing of being able to ask for what you need. Because people, if you know, we've got that, whether it's spoken or unspoken, about, you know, have to being self-reliant and getting the job done. When it takes, you know, many times it takes a team, you know, to be able to have it be complete and have those other perspectives, like Michelle sharing about, you know, going rogue. She's going rogue on us, watch out. But that, you know, brings in the chaos of the of creativity. You know, the wonder, like, you know, Elizabeth Gilbert had shared in our last book with Big Magic, the wonder of things. You know, the soul wants to be curious. The soul wants to have that whole thing about wondering about things. And that brings in both sides of your brain. You've got your creative and then your analytical side. They're being able to play with one another. And that's great. You know, it's helping to open up a whole bunch of possibilities that you might have even thought about, you know, and gay for brainstorming, you know, how that goes. So that's all really good with that, too.
Well,
so
when
go ahead.
Making the list of enabler and blocker allows us to identify what our strengths are, so that, and also maybe where we need more help, so that we can realize that if we're doing a task or in a situation where it's more of a challenge, we can hold on to the truth that we still have a gift. It just may not be in this arena.
Yeah, exactly. So, or not, it may not be in the situation that we have going on right now in this moment.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't mean it's not needed later on, but for this episode or whatever we have going on, it needs to go to the back.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
We don't have to be perfect at everything because we all came here with different gifts, talents, and we're all working together. So thank you very much, because if I had it all together, I wouldn't need you and I wouldn't be on this phone call.
Amen.
Well, you know, it takes a village, so that's good.
And we grow in conversation. We grow in conversation, and that's one thing, reason I really love what we're doing here. Let me tie this kind of back together. On page 46 here, after those questions, it talks about, but it's not enough to identify the values, traits, and strengths that represent your authentic best self. You must affirm them and trust the answers. You must believe them. They tell an important part of your personal story, and if you don't believe your story, why would anybody else? And I had a conversation this morning with a good friend of mine, and we were talking about certain areas we don't have the angst we used to have when we were younger. And what we came to was that's because, you know, they talk about in order to hit mastery, you have to be proficient. You need 10,000 hours or 10 years in that area. And so there's certain things now, like with my facilitation and the ability to bring people together and collaborate, I've been doing that well past 10,000 hours in 10 years. So that's something that I'm very comfortable with. And now, not getting too comfortable, but how do I take that in different arenas? That's who I really am. That's my authentic self. How do I take that into new arenas? And do I have the courage to, when I should be working with 50 people in a room, I say, no, we're going to hold, and I'm going to be here with these two people and do that in this moment, trusting that mastery.
Yeah, because like what a gift that was for everybody. I think that's just such a great story that that was, you know, what happened with that whole situation. So
it was a matter of really being present. Can you really be present?
Yeah. And how were they with you, with you guys sitting down like that with them? I mean, you know, because we're talking about believing and owning your own story, so you guys were really sitting there wanting to know their story.
It was honestly shocking to me because they had to wait outside for at least 15 minutes. We were finishing up with another group, and then they came in, and we were still working with people. They waited another 15 minutes to really have that time with us, and they I was shocked, and they really valued and appreciated it. And so that made it easier, of course, right? Because you could tell they really wanted it. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to put everything else down. There were several other things that we could have been doing that we might have should have been doing. But it's like, no, this is where I'm putting my time and my energy, and I'm just going to be present.
I think that's one thing that that's so important, to have people in your life that you can just know that you're going to be heard. And this, you know, this goes into just all the different things that we're talking about with this chapter. Because one thing that Amy gets into is she talks about, you know, taking the time to really think about what's important to you. Because, you know, later in the chapter we talk about your core values and who you are and what matters to you. Because they had an experiment they had done with some students where they had them list those different, take that time to be able to just be with yourself and figure out what's really important to me. And once they figured that out, when they went into their finals and different test situations, they just were just way cooler and not having so many problems with just different kinds of things that came up for them. They were able to, you know, they were looking at their just, you know, their different hormones, and then also just the different, you know, test
cortisol.
Factor type of stuff. Yeah, the cortisol. The cortisol state, was it low or high? It's the opposite.
It goes up when you are nervous and go into the fight or flight.
Right. So the cortisol stayed down, and almost it was at normal levels. So it wasn't even a factor, because when they went in and they were comfortable with what they knew and how they knew it and who they were, they didn't have, you know, it's before when in our last chapter we talked about Alan Watts, and he talks about the looping mind and how you get yourself caught up and not even being present with where you are. It's looking at the thing of like, oh gosh, how am I going to handle this test? And you know, you're not even thinking about the test. You're nervous about the fact you're just taking a test. It's not even about the topic or the information that you've got going on. Because I really, you know, later on in the chapter, she shares about, you know, artists and how they can just be in this moment. Baryshnikov, when he's dancing, and he, you know, the first year he had learned a new dance, a new performance, and so he was athletically there, but still he was learning to be there. And then the second year, Amy had gone back to see him again, and it was just he was so in the moment that he took everybody with him. And it was beyond words the way that everybody felt, because they just knew that there was this magical moment that they were all witness to, because they all went there together.
Because you're not trying to make something happen. You're just allowing it to be. It's a detachment from outcome. The kids who were taking the tests when they were measuring their cortisol, they knew. After reciting this, their core values and telling their story, they knew that they were doing the best that they could. And so what else can you do? And I think it allows you to somehow chemically detach from the outcome.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love that. Yeah. I think you're
Because you're already fully present with what's happening with yourself. You're already, you know, giving yourself the acknowledgement that you're doing the best you can in the moment. And being able to move forward with that. Yeah, so, you know, how much more can you, you know, and you're only looking to yourself for a sense of expectation. You know, I'm doing the best I can with what I know.
Absolutely.
And I know what I know, you know, and you're comfortable with your knowing.
And that's a lot. It's a lot.
That's huge. Yeah, that's huge. Yeah, that's really, really huge to have that, you know. So I really want to encourage everybody just to take some time and really write down, you know, what's important to you. Being able to look at all that and have it be something that really helps you with your sense of your, like, affirming your personal core values, and then knowing who, you know, who you can be, and just a sense of your, what's your sense of the meaning of life? What's important to you?
It was interesting.
And then all the rest of it falls into place. Go ahead.
I went to a New Year's Eve. Was that it? No, I went to a Christmas party right near New Year's Eve. And one of the things we did at the party was write down five things that are unique about us.
Oh, nice.
And that was one of the questions she asked us to address. What's unique about you that leads you to your happiest times and best performance?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize, but I was already getting prepped for this book.
Oh, wow.
Yay!
Yeah. And Carolyn Mace, when she did Help Desk on OWN, there was a young mm-hmm. man who came and asked her about relationship issues and am I doing something wrong? I can't seem to attract the right person. And her question to him was, well, what's good about you? What qualities do you have to bring to a relationship? And refocused him owning the good aspects of himself, and that shifted his vibration.
Mm-hmm. Because it came into a place of empowering himself instead of having it being another person to affirm him so he could know who he was.
Absolutely.
He was owning his own stuff, so.
Right.
You know, so spend a little time of reflecting perhaps about writing about who you think you are. The key to effective self-affirmation is that it is grounded in the truth. Your authentic
mm-hmm.
best self, your bold self, is not about psyching yourself up or saying, I am the best at this task, or I'm a winner. Your boldest self emerges through the experience of having full access to your values, traits, strengths, and knowing that you can autonomously and sincerely express them through your actions and interactions. This is what is meant to believe in your own story. In essence, to affirm is to practice the clarification of your story to yourself, allowing you to trust that who you are will come through naturally in what you say and what you do. Because telling your story to yourself is what really matters.
And it makes
it's your story, not right?
That's some story that somebody else has fed you, feeding yourself.
Yeah, and taking the time to really know what that is for yourself. You know, it reminds me of, you know, you go into any kind of work with yourself, and the counselors will always say, the only one you can change is you. And I think a part of the change that you would have is, like, who am I now and who do I want to be? In a sense of having things to be, have them being shifted.
Well, I think it gets beyond who you want to be. But
to
really get to the heart of it, wannabe has nothing to do with it.
Yeah. Well, you know, it goes back to that, that the beginning when Amy was talking about that, you know, she said, you know, it's about, I'm looking for it for a sec here, you know, fake it till you become it. You're becoming
mm-hmm.
that. It's not fake it till you make it. You're becoming it. And being able to know that that's really true for you. So just some really great things to be, you know, knowing about yourself and what, you know, the presence is about being attentive and connected, integrated on being in the moment and being able to
mm-hmm.
be from a place of being able to express yourself in a comfortable way, knowing that it's about that. So in the end of the chapter, she was talking about acting as presence, and she talks to Julianne Moore about that. She had like a 4-hour interview with her, and she realized the majority of the interview was just about little random stuff that really didn't necessarily have anything to do with the acting per se. But it really helped her to look at the just the whole experience of being connected to the moment and what that looks like, and how wonderful it is for actors, because they really can come from a place of moving into a scene and being focused. She had an example where, you know, there's all kinds of stuff going on in Julianne's house, and she was still right there and present with everybody. So it really helped Amy to see focus and presence in a different way coming from an actor's perspective. So did you get anything special out of that, Amy?
Well, I think just a couple of things I want to cite as we're running out here. is that on page 53 talks about being present in the workplace, and that William Kahn, that's in research they had done, said being present in the workplace, a person must be attentive, connected, integrated, and focused. So that would be a good practice to kind of look at that. Am I those things in my work environment? And then what? How much practice do you do before you present? So how much work do I do in order to be present? So it's that balance between preparation and going with the flow or being spontaneous. There's a great dialogue about that, so I want to support people in going and looking at that.
Yeah, because there's something for preparation, but it's also just enough so you can feel comfortable knowing that those are possibilities and knowing you're going to be able to respond in the right way in that moment, trusting yourself that perhaps will come up and you'll be good with it. Be able to, you know, focus on that. So our next chapter is going to be really exciting. We're going to be moving into stop preaching, start listening, and how presence begets presence. So I think we've kind of danced in that just a little bit this time, but, you know, it's not what you think it is. if nothing else, Amy Cuddy's always having us going from what we perceive into just, you know, and again, a lot of this is from information that through research that she's been, you know, bringing to the wonderful information that she's sharing in the book. And it's just really, really exciting to have that. So, again, you know, 30 minutes is just never enough to talk about all these wonderful things. I want to thank Michelle and Miss Amy and Miss Gloria for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank you.
Guys. All right, and we'll see you next time here for Chapter 3 in Presence here at the Transformation Cafe with our Cafe Book Club. We'll see you next time. Thanks for joining us.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Transformation Cafe podcast. To learn more, visit transformation-cafe.com for show notes, guest information, and links to previous shows. You can also subscribe to the Transformation Cafe podcast on iTunes. Join us again next time at the Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul.